And right now, it is time to bring in our friends from up north. That is in Berkshire County. The folks that own, operate, run, work, do everything, just about everything at theberkshireedge.com, theberkshireedge.com. We welcome in and say good morning to Dave and Marcy. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, we're going to start this off. I'm going to credit you folks in South County. I always liked the – I don't know much about this guy, but I always loved his name, William Smitty Pignatelli.
Oh, yeah.
I just love his name. And it sounds like a politician from the 60s, but – and but what
he isn't.
He is.
He is his dad was a selectman in Lenox, okay. From Lenox. And his dad, John Pignatelli, who I knew before I met Smitty, actually, was also a selectman in Lenox. And so his son followed in his footsteps, but also then got to be elected to the state legislature, where he's been for many years.
Well, what I like about this is that he has done something and organized something that I'm amazed hasn't been organized elsewhere, and that is he's come up with the idea for these a wave parade for the veterans. And and it sounds so simple. Like, I can't believe all the other towns didn't do this. Last I knew, Lenox, Lee, Stockbridge, and Sheffield and West Stockbridge are going to have these wave parades. What a great way to do it, socially distancing, with people standing on the sides with their masks on.
And you drive by and wave?
And wave, at the veterans. What a great idea. So congratulations.
So the veterans stand and people drive by?
That's good.
Did we have this in the Edge?
The veterans sit in the cars. The veterans ride by in the cars. And, you know, people have been having these birthday parades, these anniversary parades, where people drive by their houses and wave at them, right?
Yeah,
well,
right.
This time the veterans are going to be in the cars. And they drive by, you wave at them.
The veterans will be in the cars.
Yeah,
we wave at them.
Yeah.
But we have to stay 6 feet apart.
Oh, yeah.
How is that different from a parade?
Very different, because they're going to have a special route. And so what we found out in Connecticut, we've done these, and it's really worked out extremely well. Most people gather at friends' houses if they're along the parade route, and they're 6 feet apart. And there's clusters of people as you go along, all 6 feet apart. It really is a nice way to honor the veterans anyways. I wanted to congratulate them. I just think it's a nice idea, way to honor the veterans. Well, anyways.
Okay.
All right. Well, what's our...
Where are we doing that? I mean,
thank
you for telling me.
I know that it's, from what I gathered from the press release,
get in line.
Lenox, Lee, Stockbridge, Sheffield, and West Stockbridge.
Oh, but not Great Barrington.
Yeah, not Great Barrington. But
interesting.
It just seems like a good idea to honor the veterans. But anyways, well, because we're talking about a wave parade, of course, we know we're talking about CV, coronavirus. Connecticut is opening up today very slowly.
Uh-huh.
Your lead story that we're going to talk about, a lot of traditions have been upended and probably upended for quite a long time.
Well, maybe.
Oh. Yeah, I think so, right.
Tanglewood's the big one that you have here, though.
Tanglewood. And we've been waiting for that.
That's crushing. I mean, I posted that up on our Facebook page, and it got over 3,000 looks, because people are just crushed. I mean, that was like the final entertainment blow. Really.
Well, yeah, but, that's not the only thing.
I know. But that's just the final one that you just said, oh, gosh. And I feel so sorry for the businesses and the inns and the restaurants and the people that really depend on this summertime money.
Yes. Well, in the meantime, however, I mean, not only that, it's just, you know, we're coming up on town meeting season, which has to be virtual these days. And, it's our form of government, the town meeting. That is the government, the town meeting. And this, you know, in our form, and I'm not sure whether it applies in Connecticut, but in Massachusetts, anyways, you know, the selectmen are just the agents of the town meeting.
Same thing in Connecticut, same thing. The Board of Finance recommends to the selectmen, then the selectmen put it out for a town meeting or a town vote.
And so this time, the town meeting, well, Great Barrington anyway, is planning to have its, for the first time, it's going to hold its town meeting outside.
Okay.
So, so that
maybe we can all wait. So we can have veterans drive by us.
Yeah, right. Anyways, it's a first time in history that this is going to happen. But at least the town meeting is going to go on. And it's been going to be moved back a month too. It's going to be in June. So at least this is at least they're going to be able. We're going to be able to have it.
Well, you know, I sit here and I would normally say, well, we'll all look back at this when we're old, but I'm already old, so I guess I'll look back at it when I'm really old and
really
say,
old.
Well, you know, what
well, I'm, but we skipped over Tanglewood, and so I'd just like to go back there for a second. I mean, Tanglewood is really, I mean, it's true, it's a crusher.
Yeah.
And they waited, really. I mean, I know that we don't have the story, but I am sure they were trying every angle to stay open because, you know, they kept announcing this is going to, you know, first they announced that they weren't going to do the June concerts. Then they announced that they weren't doing their 4th of July extravaganza in Boston with fireworks and everything. And then they, you know, they were sort of announcing, making these small announcements, and they promised that they would make the big announcement about July and August on May 15th, or mid-May, and sure enough, on May 15th, they made this announcement. And so, you know, we were wondering what was going on there, that, you know, they must have been sort of trying so hard to keep Tanglewood open.
Well, you know, I mean, what's happened here is the largest fair in Connecticut, the Bethlehem Fair, is closed. The Goshen Fair is not opening. And you look at all the different theaters that have canceled their season. The Sharon Playhouse is going to try to do things out in their parking lot in July and then have some shows in August into September. But you look at all this. Lime Rock has canceled events up until sometime late in June. And the millions and millions and millions of tourist dollars that come into this region are not here. They're not here
right.
This year. And that's what makes Tanglewood such a crusher, because not only does it affect South County, believe you me, it's like Lime Rock. Tanglewood's an economic driver that affects for a 100-mile radius around. Easy.
Right.
Easy.
Well, Tanglewood isn't the only. Jacob's Pillow and Shakespeare and Company and Williamstown Theater Festival as well have canceled their seasons. And speaking of Williamstown, it's still up in the air as to whether what schools and colleges will be open.
Well, that's the next step we have to look down the road.
Yeah.
I want to get onto this other story though, because when you have a police chief and you're someone who's been there a while and the community knows, when they step down, that's also a great upheaval, and that's happening in Great Barrington.
Well, that's right. Bill Walsh has been police chief for forever, as far as I know. He's been there for 37 years as chief and been on the force for 40 years. So I think many people probably can't even remember a police department without him. But he's turning 65, which is mandatory retirement.
And he has not been well, too.
And he's not been. No, he's not. And he's had an issue with his back. But he's managed to soldier on. He had his neck in a brace for a long time, but he's managed to keep the department together, and I see him almost every day. He patrols on Main Street. He always walks up and down Main Street. It's just one of his traditions, and says hello to everybody. that's on the street. So, I mean, it's a fine old tradition.
Yeah, which is good.
Yeah.
So, you know, the question is, where will the next chief come from?
Now
he's not retiring until December, so there's some time.
Yeah. So they've got to do a search. And it looks as if they're going to, you know, do a real formal search rather than promote somebody from within. So.
Well, they can end up promoting somebody within, but I think it's always smart to do that search and comb and see what candidates are out there. And that's not offensive to anybody that works in the department. That's just the way you have to do a search.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
the
federal government will come down on you like a ton of bricks.
Yep.
Right.
So let's go on to your next story. And we here in Connecticut, today is the day where retail gets to open up very slowly with lots of restrictions.
What does that mean, slowly?
Well, like this. We operate a thrift shop, the Bargain Barn, which helps support not only the Bargain Barn, but the radio station, our local access TV station, and all the radio stations. So we can open up, but we had to be state certified first, which we did.
Meaning, oh, really? And what does that mean?
We had to send in, they gave us a list of things that we had to prove that we were doing to open up. Like we're going to take the temperature of all the volunteers that work there and employees every day. Everybody, we have to have signage where anybody comes in, they have to wear a mask or a face covering. They have to sign a release. We have to have the hand sanitizer available at many different locations. We have to have those plastic covers at registers and counters where people stand. We can't take donations right away. We have to be very careful how many donations we take in. We can only have one person per family because we can only put 10 to 12 people in the store at a time where we normally might have 20 or 30. So there's certain things that you had to go through to prove that you could open, and then they give you a certification sticker that you put on the window of the door. So there's so it's very slowly. There's going to be four phases, almost like what you're going to do in Massachusetts.
Yeah, that's the phase. It's four phases to gradually reopen the economy, and at the same time, monitor to see whether there's been a resurgence of this virus too. I mean, that's the fear, is that it's going to come back with a vengeance, you know, and we'll have to go through this all over again.
And that's why businesses really want people to follow the rules, because the kicker to all these reopenings here in Connecticut and Massachusetts and New York will be, if anything starts to become a hotspot again, they're going to go back to a complete shutdown. So it's so important for people just to follow these rules.
Yeah.
So how did you get all this stuff? I mean, how did you get, how are you going to take people's temperature?
We have one of those, we purchased one of those things, infrared temperature.
You can get those?
Yeah, yeah. Well,
because I know people in New York who were searching all over town for a thermometer and weren't able to find one.
You can't get them locally. You have to order them through Amazon or something like that. And guess where they come from?
Where? China.
China. It's not funny, folks, but it is funny.
Yes, right.
You know, everything comes from China, and I'm sure that there was a time, maybe, 100 years ago, where people were saying, you know, where'd you get that? Well, we got it from the United States.
A year ago, when I was 5 or 10 years old, the big thing was, it's made in Japan.
Made in Japan, right.
No, it was.
Yep.
But the Japanese, at a certain point, made a national decision that they were going to upgrade the quality of what they were producing. And that all stopped, that the junk came from Japan. And then they started to make quality electronics and cars and... But that was really a national decision on the part of the Japanese that they were going to stop making junk.
Well,
and they succeeded. So now it's made in China.
Everything old is new again. Is what the old thing is. Well, anyway, so with the phased opening in Massachusetts, that'll be very interesting for everybody to see. But you know, I followed the Berkshire Chamber of Commerce very, very closely, and I've seen their comments and their ideas about the reopening of the economy, and you have put together a story on that.
Yes, we have. Well, it's one Berkshire has announced this the guidelines for reopening. Meanwhile, the governor has done his. One Berkshire has gotten together with local politicians and businesses, and they're going to open they see a way to open the economy here in the Berkshires as well, and that is the as I say, one Berkshire. So it's going to be another one of these phased openings of the economy here, because you know it's going to be a devastating summer, I'm afraid, without some assurance that people can come here without getting ill. So,
did you have your mask on?
No, I just sneezed. Sorry.
No.
I'm kidding. I've always wanted to do that though. When I'm out and you see people actually without masks.
Oh yeah.
I want to stand by them and with my mask on, cough and fake sneeze and see what they do.
But, yeah. Right.
I'll probably get shot.
Yeah.
But you know, it's interesting.
Well,
it's interesting.
You know, Marshall, they held a virtual, one Berkshire held a virtual town meeting, you know, in which they have, via Zoom, in which they discussed this. And we have that, by the way, a video of that particular, of that event, which the title was Reopening the Berkshire Economy. So, you know, it was Senator Anna Hines. And you know, our state reps were also part of it.
Did they get a good virtual turnout?
You know, I think that would be an interesting question. I don't know how many viewers there were, but
they probably should. They should know that. Huh? I mean, they can figure that out.
What you can do, if it was a video meeting, that you'll see all the different faces and all the different names pop up on it. I get a great kick out of when they first started these Zoom meetings, because nobody was technically proficient at it, and a lot of very funny things happened at these meetings. but you know what? I'll give credit to everybody. The people that serve our towns on the select boards and things like that, and the zoning, and they're all volunteers.
Yeah,
and
right.
And they've, like the people in the post office, you know, you couldn't pay me enough money to have to handle what they have to handle during this, and to be out in the public and the people in the stores. So you have to give these people just a ton of credit for going through this and still trying to pull it off. You know, really, it's an amazing thing.
Yeah. But somebody told me, I think Jacob's Pillow had a disaster with a Zoom. They were trying to do a Zoom performance internationally. They had people, and it crashed.
Yeah.
This was a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, a friend of mine was watching it, and she said she thought maybe it was just her because they've got a satellite dish, so she thought maybe it was just her connection. But then she kept seeing these emails going back and forth, you know, we're working on it. And apparently they, you know, it was really a very unsuccessful effort.
What you needed to be successful, and we don't have it a lot around here, even though we do have internet service, you need constant high quality, huge bandwidth. What happens out here in the hinterlands is the more people that join in, the slower the service gets until finally it gets to a point where it just shuts down and it can't handle it. People, it's no longer a rallying cry that people are going to disagree with anymore. Upgraded internet service for these rural areas where it can handle things like this is a definite must in the future, a definite must.
But what's interesting is, you know, this Zoom program has really been a lifesaver for a lot of organizations, you know, in view of this epidemic, because it is a way to conduct business and make decisions and continue to operate.
We have here at the station Zoom, another one called Clearview. Of course, we do use Skype because Skype is. But there's so, and Google has a service out there that we had to install.
Yeah, Google Meet. We used that for the first time yesterday.
We have to learn all these things.
I know.
It's terrific, actually. I mean, people are going to be doing. I wonder how people are going to conduct their business and their operations once this is over, or maybe it
I think
hopefully it will be over, but I bet it's going to be changed a lot.
I think if you're a person that has an office job, you'll be doing your job from home eventually. I just don't think you'll be going into the offices anymore.
No, not for a while.
Yeah, not for a while. I want to move on to the story about Bridge, a multicultural bridge. Let's talk a little bit about that for people that aren't aware what that is.
Oh, a multicultural bridge is an organization that was it's led by a woman named Van Sant. Gwen Van Sant is, and it brings together people of diverse cultural and racial backgrounds, and it's been a real effort to bring, as I say, these different constituencies of our community together, and she has an office in the school system in which she teaches multicultural curriculum.
She also works at Simon's Rock.
She works at Simon's Rock. I mean, she's everywhere, Gwen is. And so they're having some virtual talks that they've scheduled on how this particular pandemic is affecting, those groups in society that are at some disadvantage. So it's going to be pretty interesting. She's good for her for getting this together, And we have there right on our front, right embedded in the story is their schedule for all of their virtual, seminars. And program, so it's you can sign up.
All right, now,
and watch.
We have about 2 minutes left, and we want to talk about the Carolyn Neuberger's latest chapter.
But where is Jill today?
Well, Jill has animals that have to take care of, and every once in a while, Jill comes in a little bit late, but that's okay.
Yes.
That's a great thing about being a co-owner.
Yes, exactly.
Well, wait a minute. What kind of animals?
Oh, dogs, cats, or you name it.
No. I thought maybe they're horses.
She does have horses, but that's a horse of a different color.
It just occurred to me. I haven't heard her. So, Carol Neuberger. Well, this is now chapter 46 of Carolyn's explorations of the world around her in the forest in Lenox.
Yes. So she and her husband Eli live off Route 7 and in Lenox, in the middle of the woods. Really, they have a lovely house that's in, surrounded by the forest, and Carolyn. Is an artist and a psychiatrist, but she and her husband lived in Boston, and they retired, so-called retired in quotes, out here.
They have so much energy.
And Eli plays the upright bass, and has a
tuba.
And tuba, and she plays the bass.
No, she plays the washboard.
Was the washboard? Oh, that's the washboard, right. I'm sorry. But anyway, Eli is a professional musician and a psychiatrist.
You're a pediatrician.
Okay. Well, I've got it all wrong. Well, never, don't listen to me. Pay no attention to what I
say. I hate to tell you, but you got it all wrong, and we're out of time.
Well, anyway, read the article. She's wonderful. She's doing...
And she has wonderful drawings of the woods.
She's a really talented artist.
The article is at theberkshireedge.com, theberkshireedge.com.
We'll try to get her background and her bio right next time.
Hey, guys, stay safe this weekend. We'll speak to you next week.
Okay. Have a nice holiday.
All right, you too.
Bye-bye.
Take care. That is the Berkshire Edge on air here at Robin Hood Radio, and you can find them at theberkshireedge.com.